And they run through our ass like shit through a tin horn, man, and we could not stop them.
It's ridiculous that they do. That was a huge colony. Well, we didn't miss it. You know, the typical rah, 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 zip, boom, bah, boo.
You don't cuss. You don't drink. So what are your vices?
I have been known to chew a bit of tobacco when I get a little tired or watching film.
Hey, I'm Coach O. I just love my Hummer. I have my Hummer. You need a Hummer? Tell them about it, JoJo.
They've won the biggest championship, and that's the championship of life.
Gas control. Everybody just do your job. You understand that?
Welcome into the latest episode of That SEC Podcast. I'm your host, Michael Breton. I go by SEC Mike on Twitter. And I'm joined, as always, by my cousin Shane, who goes by Big Orange Vols on Twitter. What are you up to, you big Tennessee homer?
Hey, buddy, what's going on?
Not much, Shane. We like to start off with a little humor if we can. And, you know, I came across this little tidbit on Johnny Manziel's, one of my all-time favorites, and Jerry Jones. And obviously that whole deal about the NFL draft, I don't know if you can... That was the 2014 draft, if I'm not mistaken, Shane. And, you know, Johnny Manziel kind of went tumbling down the draft boards. And once it got to the Dallas Cowboys, I mean, I think everybody in the damn world was cheering for Johnny Manziel to go to Dallas.
Yeah.
And we got a little behind-the-scenes peek at what exactly went down there. And it's pretty hilarious. So this is a writer who just wrote a book on the Cowboys. He reveals... what all went down there in the Dallas war room?
Tell a story in the book about the Johnny Manziel draft in 2014. I don't know if you got to that one, but it's actually pretty funny that he was outvoted, everybody else in the room to one.
Crazy.
On not wanting to take Manziel. And their list was three defensive players, Anthony Barr, who went to the Vikings, Aaron Donald, who went to the Rams, and Ryan Shazier, who went one spot ahead of them to the Steelers. And Stephen Jones was thinking all along, we never even needed to discuss Johnny Manziel because they thought he was going to be picked way before the Cowboys were picking. So all of a sudden, Shazier goes off the board, and Stephen's going, oh, my God, I got to deal with my father now. And Jerry's going one by one around the room. You think we should take Manziel, don't you? No. He'll fit perfectly in our own. No, Jerry, we can't do it. So he's shut out. He's sitting there by himself. And to his credit, at least, he didn't force them to take Manziel, although he bitched and moaned about it. And Stephen was sitting right to his right. And as soon as they call in the league office to call in Zach Martin, who turned out to be a great player, Jerry slaps Stephen so hard on the leg that it kind of reverberates around the room. And he gets in his ear and he says, son, let me tell you something. I didn't get to this spot in my life by playing things down the middle. And you just played it down the middle. And if that's the way you're going to run this team, you're never going to be a success. Now, Stephen was hurt by that because his father's his idol. You know, fortunately for him, he didn't turn around and say to his father, well, tell me about the last 23 years. But Jerry never apologized to him about it. But wow. The fact that when Manziel was cut by the Browns, Jerry never went in and say, hey, we get a second shot at this. He never did that. So that was his way of saying, hey, you were right.
Okay, Shane, if, you know, Johnny Manziel flamed out pretty bad there in Cleveland, I think it would have been much worse there in Dallas, wouldn't you say?
Man, that would have been a big stage, brother. Man, but you never know. I mean, it may not have gone as bad. I mean, Cleveland Browns and Dallas Cowboys, way two different teams, you know. They had more connections there, but I could just see Jerry in that room just all giddy thinking that he's going to get old Johnny Manziel down there, and he was already selling the jerseys, man.
But I think the best part of that at the end is, you know, it's not even – the GM of the team, it's his damn son, and he's just basically saying, you know, you're a failure at life, and this is why. And his son turned out to be right. He never even apologized. Oh, I mean, that's classic Jerry Jones right there, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, I love it, man. Jerry. Oh, shit.
All right, Shane, so one thing we did not get into on the last podcast was the updated college football rankings. And that's because those damn things came out at like 9:30 at night on Tuesday. So we weren't going to wait that damn long for these meaningless rankings. But just wanted to run down these real quick just to get your thoughts on where everyone ranks in the SEC. Obviously, Alabama's number one. LSU's number seven. So they were number three. They didn't fall that far. Kentucky, number 11. Florida, number 15. Mississippi State, 16. And believe it or not, Shane, Auburn has jumped back in. They're at number 24. What are your thoughts on that?
So Florida just completely fell out, right?
No, Florida's at 15.
Oh, sorry. I missed that one. Yeah, that was my dark horse to sneak in until they got smoked by Missouri. But no, I think the fact that LSU didn't drop that much is kind of interesting, mm-hmm. especially the fact that, you know, we're going to be having Alabama and Georgia play each other. So I don't know. I mean, I've seen crazier things happen, and who knows? LSU may be able to jump back into this. So can you give me from 1 to 7, other than the SEC? I mean, what are the other teams?
Sure. Number 1, obviously, Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
2, Clemson. 3, Notre Dame. 4, Michigan. 5, Georgia. And number 6, Oklahoma.
Okay. So, yeah, it's going to take a lot of pieces moving, but it could happen. I'm just curious. I mean, because we're probably not going to have two. It feels like we're not going to have two SEC teams in this playoffs, don't you think?
No, I disagree. And, you know, I've heard some of the same commentary you're making about LSU, about, hell, maybe they still got a shot. They're only 3 removed from actually being in the college football playoff. Mm-hmm. But I caution LSU fans, you know, these rankings, this is my problem with them. They're damn meaningless. And we've seen that with the year TCU was number 4, Baylor was number 5, going into the final rankings. They both beat the hell out of the teams they were facing, and for some damn reason they dropped. So it's only the last ones that matter, and I don't think LSU's not even going to win their division. They're not going to – under no circumstances will they let them in the playoff. They're not going to – even if, let's say, 4 of the teams in front of them fall and they keep winning – they'll still find a way to drop LSU. So I don't know. I think this is, I don't buy much into that. But you know, to go off what you were asking about two SEC teams, here's how that happens. Alabama wins out, Georgia wins out, and Georgia beats Alabama in the SEC championship game. Alabama's still going to get in.
Okay, so, but if Georgia gets beat by Alabama, you don't think Georgia gets in?
No, definitely not, because they've already got the one loss. But I think if you're looking at a one-loss Alabama mm-hmm. and a one-loss Georgia, they would both get in the college football playoff, in my opinion.
Okay. All right, I see what you're saying, man. That's good stuff. I am curious because, I don't know, crazy things happen at the end of the year, but if Georgia, I mean – who knows? What if Georgia comes out and smokes Alabama? I'm not saying that's going to happen, but mm-hmm. do you think there's any way possible that they do get left out? I mean, would it have to be a statement game? Is that what you think?
I still think they'd put damn Alabama in it for some damn reason, just because of how much respect they have. And
yeah,
I mean, who else? You only got 2 other undefeated teams, Clemson and Notre Dame, so you'd put them in. You'd put mm-hmm. Georgia in. And then I think at that point you're debating Alabama and Michigan. I don't know. Yeah. I think they'd put the damn Crimson Tide in again, but you know, you could be right, but I also think there won't be 3 undefeated teams. I think there'll be most likely, if Alabama loses, I think there'll only be 1 undefeated, but if Alabama wins out, I think there'll only be about 2 undefeated headed into the playoff.
Yeah. Yeah.
And one final note, you know, I didn't want to just sit here and bury LSU. I don't think there's a realistic chance they get into the college football playoff, but they are the highest ranked 2-loss team in the entire poll. And a lot of people take issue with that, but here's an interesting stat that I saw. So of the college football top 25 teams,
mm-hmm.
LSU has beaten 3 of them. And when you look at the 3 teams behind LSU, Washington State, who's 8-1, West Virginia, 7-1, Ohio State, 8-1, those 3 teams have combined to only beat 2 of the top 25. So LSU's got more wins than those 3 combined. And when you look at it that way, LSU deserves their ranking, in my opinion.
Yeah. No, I mean, the resume is I mean, impressive. I guarantee they wish they had that Florida game back, especially this week, you know, because then they'd be 1-loss team.
Yeah. All right, Shane. So enough of all that BS. Let's go around the league.
Let's do it.
Now let's go around the league. Around the league.
We hadn't decided how we're going to play the guys, so, and I wouldn't tell you if I did, so, you know, I don't mind you asking a question, but I don't need to answer it.
No, I mean, I'll be whistling Rocky Top by the end of the week, all our players. I mean, it's just like, right, I mean, just hear it over and over, and, you know, like every other or every third song, it'll roll through within the crowd noise that we play at practice, so you just you get used to it. It's a catchy tune, right? I mean,
this game's going to be a street fight. This game's going to be a street fight. I mean, some of you guys don't know who Kimbo Slice is. Hopefully you do. And you go back to it, man, this isn't a sanctioned fight. This is a street fight. I mean, this is the SEC. So, man, it's time. It's time to put on the hard hat, lunch pail. Let's get to work.
All right, Shane, I think the biggest news of Wednesday came, it dropped a little late. People may have missed this one. And we still don't know the implications of it because it's not clear how bad this injury is. But reports out of Gainesville, Kyle Trask, the guy that looked like to be the starter for the Gators, he suffered an injury in practice. Apparently he had to be carted off the field. And he was the one that came in for Felipe Franks. And, you know, he had a pretty good game. While, of course, Franks looks terrible last week. He didn't look that much better against Georgia. Thoughts on the Gators losing potentially their starting quarterback moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, like, things couldn't get more murky down there, you know? Mm-hmm. Apparently, they're talking last week about Franks, you know, getting in a fight in the locker room. And I don't know, maybe you wonder if maybe he tripped old Trask while he was out there on the field today.
Well, Shane, and then how about this? So, the former Florida quarterback, Luke Del Rio, you know, he's becoming someone of a, he's trying to be like a media personality, I guess. He's mm-hmm. He's got his own podcast. That's what all the cool people are doing. And he's, you know, he does these Periscope videos and, you know, he's got some pretty good insight. Obviously, he played for Nick Saban a little bit. He played in at Florida. So, you know, he knows coaches, he knows players, but he made a really interesting comment there. I believe this was on late Tuesday. Mm-hmm. But here's what Luke Del Rio tweeted out. Call me crazy, but I honestly believe that if Dan Mullen starts Felipe Franks this week, then he is at serious risk of losing the fan base. Now, just think about that comment, Shane, because damn, 2 weeks ago, they were ready to fucking crown this guy.
Yeah.
I mean, I was putting out, you know, my thoughts on SEC Coach of the Year, and I did not have Dan Mullen in my top three, and like they were fucking ready to fight my ass. Now you got the Florida quarterback here saying he's going to lose the damn fan base 2 games later. I mean, that's just how wild the SEC is. And then if you want to take it a step further, Felipe Franks responded to Del Rio with just a thumbs up emoji on Twitter.
Oh my gosh, he just doesn't care, does he? You know, he's like, if I don't play, I just don't care. Thumbs up emoji. You know, just don't even respond. Just go out there and do your damn thing. And I think that's why Florida fans are impatient. I mean, extremely impatient. They're a lot like Tennessee. You know, they went through a decade of greatness, and they want nothing more than to get back there. And the problem with Florida is I think they were kind of tricked. I think they came out, you know, and caught some teams off guard, and I think they're on their way, but they're not there yet. But it kind of tricked the fan base and thinking, oh God, we're right back in it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is they're not. And the fall guy, I'm telling you, man, it's the last time you're going to see this kid in a Gator jersey is Franks, if you ask me. I think he's gone after this season.
Well, this is just so wild that, you know, here you got former quarterback saying they can't risk playing this guy.
Mm-hmm.
And now his main competition may be out for the year. I mean, I just don't know where in the hell this goes, you know?
Do you think maybe we see Emory? I mean, is there a possibility there?
I mean, potentially. I mean, but Dan Mullen this week said, you know, he was asked, why are you not playing this? Or he wasn't asked that bluntly, but just he was asked that question, you know, why is Emory Jones not getting more of a look? And I mean, he said, I don't want to damage his development by putting him mm-hmm. out there too early. So, Can he really do that? Or what the hell is he saying? I mean, what's he saying to the fans? What's he saying to future recruits? What's he saying to Emory Jones if Monday he's not ready and Saturday he is? I mean, I guess he was just throwing some bullshit out there anyway, if that's the truth. But I don't think that looks good.
No, and I mean, the schedule's not that bad. I mean, they've got South Carolina, Idaho, and Florida State. But I will tell you this. If they drop that South Carolina game, I mean, especially if they drop it to the hands of Franks, if Franks comes out and just gives another shitty performance, the fan base is going to get upset. And I don't know, I mean, how close Dan is to the pulse of this, of these fans, or if, you know, who he's really listening to down there. I mean, he may have already explained to the AD that, hey, listen, this year is year one, okay? So I'm not gonna burn a red shirt on a freshman just because some fans are upset, because I've the bigger picture here is me 2-3 years from now. So I'm just kind of curious, though, just if this is a sloppy game, do we see him come in? Do we see him burn that red shirt? I think he's got, what'd you say, 2 more games?
Yeah, if I'm not mistaken, I'm trying to rack my brain here. He for sure played in Georgia, and he for sure played in the game they beat the hell out of Charleston.
Okay.
It was one of those or so. Yeah, so that's at least 2 that he's played in. I think those are the only 2 that he's played in.
And it just feels like, I mean, if he does come in there, it just seems like that's going to be his job, unless he just doesn't do it. Because I don't see, if they bring Emory in, Frank's ever coming back in.
Right, man. Now we got to think of the bowl game too, and that's my thing. I think they're saving him for the bowl game because you get those extra 15 practices.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in a bowl game, I mean, they're somewhat meaningless. I mean, they are fun to go to, and you want your team to win. But if you lose, what does it really matter?
Right.
I think they give them, you know, those 15 extra practices, let them get the start, and then you kind of have – hell, if he has a great game, then you say, hey, this is probably our guy all offseason and moving into their sophomore – or his redshirt freshman year. And I think that's what you got to do. So – It would be pretty wild, though, if they went Frank, South Carolina, Emory Jones, Idaho, Felipe Franks, Florida State. I mean, that may be the consequence of this new redshirt rule, you know, and then back to Emory Jones for the bowl game. But I don't know. Dan Mullen's crazy enough to do it, I think.
Yeah, he's smart, man. He's got a plan. We just don't know it yet.
Okay, Shane, so one final note here with Luke Del Rio, and this one actually involves Tennessee. So like I said, Luke Del Rio's got his own podcast, and one of his first guests there was Steven Garcia. You just never know what that old crazy bastard's going to say, so I figured I got to tune in for this one, and it was a pretty good podcast, and nothing too revealing, but it was kind of interesting to get his thoughts on playing for Spurrier and all his weird things that he got going on. So I do recommend it. It is called the Drop Back is what Luke Del Rio's podcast is called.
Uh-huh.
But during this podcast, for whatever reason, they just started talking about Derrick Henry quickly. And that was Luke Del Rio's roommate when he was at Alabama. So obviously anyone listening to this knows who Derrick Henry is, he's from Florida. Played for Alabama, won the Heisman mm-hmm. Trophy. Now he's plays running back for the Tennessee Titans. And Tennessee fans should know he almost picked Tennessee. He was a big Derek Dooley guy. But why did Derrick Henry choose Alabama over Tennessee, Shane?
Why?
It's because Tennessee was an Adidas school.
Oh, shit.
And that's what Del Rio says is legitimate. That's the only reason. If it was a Nike school, he would have went there. And, you know, the irony in that is like 2 years later, Tennessee became a Nike school, so it would have been a damn Nike school anyway. thoughts on Tennessee missing out on a Heisman Trophy winner?
Hey, you just never know with these kids, you know, what makes them tick. Some of them want to get away from their parents. Some of them want to stay near them. So, I mean, yeah, this one, Nike, I mean, you would think Oregon would have a lot better teams. I mean, they started out real big, but I could see it. You know, I thought Under Armour would be a big deal, bigger deal than it is. But apparently the kids love the Nike. So and I don't blame them. I think I've seen some pretty rough schemes with Adidas, and I'm happy with what we got. I just wish we would have had him. I mean, that would have made things a little easier.
Well, this is why I don't get people who say, you know, they're happy that Tennessee got rid of those smoky gray uniforms, and they say stupid shit like, well, if they're picking the school for the uniform, we don't want them anyway. Like,
exactly. That's
fucking stupid. Like, I understand there's tradition. I mean, hell, how many times has Tennessee wore those smoky gray uniforms? 3 times, 4 times? I don't know what it is, but has that damn ruined the damn school? That's not the reason they suck now. It has nothing to do with the uniforms, and I agree the uniforms don't make them better on the field, but it, you know, it seems to bring energy. The recruits, look at every time one of these recruits come to campus and gets his photo taken, it's in that damn smoky gray shit. They love it. It's nonsensical to me to be just be, we're Tennessee, all we do is orange and white. I mean, that works for Alabama because it's Alabama. It works for Georgia because they're Georgia right now. But while you're chasing those teams, you have to do everything that you can to gain an edge, even if it's something stupid. If you, no matter how stupid you think a jersey is, if that's the difference between getting, this is the best example ever. You can have Derrick Henry, or you can fucking try and stop him, and he's going to stomp your ass, and it comes down to a jersey. I mean, make that decision, you know?
Exactly. No, I'm with you, brother. I mean, I never thought of it like that, but you're right. I mean, you hear a lot of these people on Twitter and, you know, I mean, a bunch of old asses like me, and we're stuck in the traditional ways, but we're not trying to recruit 40-year-olds, 30-year-olds, you know. Mm-hmm. We're trying to recruit 18, 17-year-olds, and if they like nice jerseys or if they like to mix things up, then why not? That's an edge that you could take advantage of. Tennessee's not Alabama. They can't just roll out the same, you know, they're not Penn State right now. You know, if we're on a tear and 11-game winning season, they want to go back to the tradition, that's fine. But right now we're looking for a little edge to try to separate us in the recruiting field. And one of the things you mentioned, every time I see a recruit get an offer from Tennessee, they tweet a Tennessee picture of them in the smoky grays. A smoky gray that they're not going to get to wear when they come up here. So, you know, eventually that's going to catch on. So if coach is cool with sending postcards out with the smoky grays, but he's not cool with them wearing it, eventually these players are going to catch on and, you know, they're going to know. I'm not saying that that's why they're coming here, but it may, like we just saw it, there, it may be one or two on your team that say, hey, damn, I love them smoke grays, or I love, or are these other schools, you know, some of these other ones that come out with, Kentucky's got some pretty cool schemes coming out, you know, something like that. Or maybe that's what set them off and said, you know what, I'd look good in that, you know?
Mm-hmm. And here's another thing, Shane, that's kind of, it's similar to that, maybe not exactly, but Jeremy Pruitt was asked on Wednesday if he would accept a bowl bid if Tennessee finished the regular season 5-7. And here's what Pruitt had to say.
You know, we'd love to play as many games as we could. You know, in the spring, I wish we could have had 45 practices instead of 15. So we need all the practice we can get.
Is that a yes?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, Shane. So for some damn reason, people seem to take issue with the fact that some coaches are happy, I wouldn't say happy, but would accept a bowl bid with a 5-7 regular season. Would you, as a Tennessee fan, take issue at all with Tennessee going to a bowl game if they finish 5-7?
Hell no, man. That's more football to watch. I'd go there with no games won. Knowing we're going to get smoked, I'd still watch it. I'm just curious on this bowl thing, because a lot of these coaches got contracts saying if they get a bowl that they get a, you know, some sort of bonus or anything like that. And I wonder if it's like negated if it's a 5-win season, you know?
I think if you make a bowl, they get those bonuses, I would think. And I think they get even more if they win the bowl. So I would imagine, yeah, they get all that money.
Oh, well, and to Pruitt loved nothing more than to have a couple more weeks to practice that 1-yard dive we have.
And that's the thing. I don't understand what the hell people are thinking. This team in particular, you know, there's a couple like this. Arkansas could really use it. I would say Ole Miss, Texas A&M. A lot of, you know, teams with first year coaches, they desperately, Florida would be another one. Mm-hmm. You are just, there's no negative to getting 15 extra bowl practices. I don't know what in the hell people are thinking. And for people saying, well, hell, that'll take away from the recruiting. You could still get recruits on campus. And starting December 17th until mid-January, that's an NCAA dead period, which means you are not allowed to, go to the recruits' houses or go to their schools. You're not allowed to have interaction with them. You can call them and you can text them and you can, direct message on Twitter. But they could be doing that while they're practicing too and setting up game plans and whatnot. So there's no disadvantage to this aside from, you could potentially win a bowl game and have a 6-7 record, or if you lose it, you have a 5-8 record. But who in the hell cares? What's the difference between having a 5-7 record and a 5-8 record? I mean, you're still a fucking losing team, but you're missing out on development time.
Yeah, well, let me ask you this. Last year, who had the number one recruiting class?
Georgia.
And they played for a natty. So, I mean, you find time, Mike.
Exactly. All right, Shane. So sticking with, the SEC teleconference, there was a little bit of an interesting nugget that developed here. And it happened, we touched on this on our previous episode with old Ed Orgeron and Chad Morris and how far that relationship goes. And it's even more in-depth than that, because on the previous episode, we talked about Orgeron recruiting Jevon Snead, who is a Texas high school quarterback, is very touted. I believe he was a four-star. This was, a decade ago or much longer even. I think it was around 2002, 2003, what have you. Mm-hmm. And that was Chad Morris, his high school coach. On the SEC teleconference, Ed Orgeron went into some information. Apparently, they even had a damn job interview at the Waffle House.
And no, I recruited Jevon Snead, his quarterback. He was at Stephenville, and I interviewed him at the Waffle House in Oxford, and I ended up hiring Hugh Freeze instead. So, but I always had a good relationship with Coach Morris. I think he's an excellent coach. He's an excellent recruiter. He knows everybody in Texas. He did a tremendous job in Clemson. I consider him a friend. I know he's going to have a lot of success there.
So there was old Ed Orgeron, admitting that.
Mike, I love the Waffle House. I don't know about you, brother.
Ironically enough, Shane, that job that Orgeron interviewed Chad Morris for went to Hugh Freeze. And everyone went wild as soon as this was announced. So when Chad Morris had his time on the call, the first couple questions were on the Waffle House.
It was at the Waffle House, I think.
Yeah, it was. It was at the Waffle House, and actually wound up being out at his house. Went out there as well, and I just thinking back on it, I want to say Hugh was already on his staff. anyway, we did, yes. I went up there, and I went up there with Jevon. Actually, Jevon went on an official visit up there, and called me and said, Coach, I need you to come up here. And so I got on a plane and flew up there and went through the rest of the official visit with him. And I went through an interview with Coach Orgeron and the whole bit. So, yeah, it was and then wound up having another follow-up interview at the AFCA convention down in San Antonio. And it was after our Texas high school social that he was involved in and wanted to come into. So I got him in it, and we had a chance to visit. So, yes, that is true.
Disappointed you didn't get the job or D.O. Ed one or whatever.
Well, I remind him every now and then when I see him that he didn't hire me. So he said it worked out pretty good anyway. So, it's all good. Coach has done a fabulous job everywhere he's been.
Hey, Chad, just kind of going back to that interview with Ed, what was the position?
It was wide receivers, I believe. It and tight ends, and might have been tight ends and a little bit of inside receivers. It's been so long ago. It was one of those two.
Oh, I got you. What'd you get at the Waffle House?
You know what? I'm sure I got a I got the number one there, I'm sure. So it was good. It was good. I got Ed to pay for it.
All right, Shane, so that was Chad Morris's style of this epic Waffle House meeting. I mean, how great is it to think that you can walk into the damn Waffle House in any of these SEC towns, and there's a damn coaching interview going on between the head coach of Ole Miss and a touted, high school coach from Texas? That's pretty wild, isn't it?
Dude, I'll tell you this. I went down to so this happened in Mississippi, and when you sent this to me, the first thing I thought about is I had to go down to not too long ago to Biloxi,
mm-hmm.
Biloxi, Mississippi. I don't know if you've ever been there.
No,
but I walked out of our little condo there, and we were going we were going to go grab a bite to eat. And I passed like 10, no joke, 10 Waffle Houses. it felt like it, In fact, it was the first Waffle House I ever seen on the ocean. You could come out of the Waffle House parking lot, look across the street, and there's the ocean. It blew my mind. And I said, this has got to be the capital of they had to start this company down here somewhere. But the fact you brought that up, that they met in Mississippi, I just kind of had a flashback. But I did a little research, and I want you to guess, out of all the cities in the South, or actually in the country, do you know which city has the most Waffle Houses?
In the United States, what city has the most Waffle Houses?
Yeah.
Daytona Beach.
Nope. Atlanta, Georgia. So there's your little fun fact on Waffle House. Did a little research on it today, but I was just curious if Mississippi had most.
Yeah, when you asked me that, I was trying to think of the trashiest city that I could think of, and that's what I came up with. But yeah, definitely. There's nothing wrong with a good Waffle House. It's good to know that in Mississippi they reserve the beachfront property for Waffle House. That just warms my heart, Shane.
Oh, I love it. It must be all them casinos down there, I guess. When they get out, it's time to eat some breakfast. And it's the only thing you can afford.
So, Shane, the only other note I've got here, Chad Morris, he met with the media there after practice on Wednesday. Mm-hmm. He announced that old Nate Dalton, the special teams player, he didn't say he was removed from the team. He said he's chosen to take a step back from the team. And the only thing that I can really remember from old Dalton was one of these games. I think it might have been the Alabama game. It was Alabama or North Texas. It was one of these damn games where he damn slapped a guy. Chad Morris threw his ass out. And that was all she wrote for old Nate Dalton. But why I bring that up, it's not a key player by any means, but I think that's something to keep in mind here for, like I noted with the bowl practices, a lot of these first-year coaches, you can go to, Florida, Arkansas, Tennessee, Ole Miss to an extent, Texas A&M. I think you really got to watch this last month and see, I don't want to say run off because that sounds like a dirty word, but mm-hmm. particularly after the season too, I think you'll see a lot of defections from these programs. And it's not always the coaches just trying to run a guy off. Maybe they're just being honest with them, telling them they can't play in the new system. And, obviously players want to play, so they need to go somewhere where they actually can contribute. But I think this will be kind of a first of a lot of guys leaving programs in the SEC. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, we do see that. And it's kind of funny because, you know the big names, but there's a lot of players in the background that you don't know, and it's really amazing how many players actually transfer every year. You could watch a game. I remember I was watching the Tennessee West Virginia game, and I'm looking at this defensive front, and the guy came from. I was like, well, he can't be that good. He played in West Virginia, but then he originally was recruited to like Oregon or something like that, or mm-hmm. Somewhere, or UCLA. I can't remember. USC. He was a big defensive lineman for USC, and it's just kind of funny when you look at these classes, and if you get on there, hell, half the roster played on a different college before they came to your university.
Well, speaking of that, Shane, one note on transfers that I saw today. This is this was a report by, I think it was Mark Enos there in Kentucky, but according to him, 20 Louisville players this semester have filed paperwork to transfer from the program. And just because they filed the papers doesn't mean they intend on transferring, but I guess it's the first step, obviously. So Louisville could see 20 transfers from its football team. Sounds like things are going great there for Bobby Petrino.
Golly. Yeah, I'll tell you what. But you're opening up, you're opening up scholarships. Maybe that's what Morris is doing, just getting rid of some of his dead weight because he's doing all that recruiting down there.
All right, Shane, that's all I got on this one. A little bit quicker, that's probably not the right word. That's all I got in this one, Shane. You know, it was kind of a light news day in the SEC. Do you got anything before we jump off here?
No, I mean, this is usually the, worst news day of the week. And so it's kind of hard to fill some of this stuff in. I did get some requests for Tell the Truth Thursday, so maybe we start rolling those bad boys back in. But until then, that's really all I've got. We did get another 5-star ghost review on iTunes, so I don't know who did that, but you know who you are, and I appreciate you. And appreciate all the listeners taking the time to hang out with us. And one thing I did want to bring up next, it will be next, Wednesday. Mm-hmm. I don't think we're going to be able to do a Wednesday show. I haven't told you yet, Mike, but I've got to go down to Memphis, so I'll be traveling that day, and it may be a late one. So we'll try out. We'll let you know a little closer, but we may be down a show next week. So just giving you the heads up.
You doing some recruiting down there, Shane?
Yeah. That's it, brother. I'm going to go meet Oak Morris over at the Waffle House.
All right, Shane, that's all I got. I'll catch you on the next one. Thanks as always for joining me, and thanks everyone for tuning in. We really appreciate it.
All right, see you guys. Go Vols.